If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I hope you can hear it in my voice. It's excitement. It's reverence. I have not talked to Dr. Patricia McConnell on the radio or in person. I just haven't bumped into Dr. McConnell at a conference in several years. And she is legendary when it comes to animal behavior, including behavior of our best friends. Her books include For the Love of a Dog and The Other End of the Leash. And I will tell you, if you purchase one book, and if you're a dog lover, that might be the book to get. Because I learned, and you will learn so very much. So there I was. I was a speaker at a conference, and I was on the advisory board at that time for Pet Partners. They certify therapy animals. And I remember I was speaking about cats, actually. I think it was about feline enrichment. And right there, I could picture her right now in my mind. And this was at least 10 years ago. Sitting in the center, like the fourth or fifth row, maybe sixth row back, a room filled with maybe 200 people. I look up and there she is. Dr. McConnell, and I'm terrified because she is in the room. And then I give my talk, and then after the talk, she raises her hand, and she says, "You asked a question, Dr. McConnell, and then you complimented my talk about cats. You're known more as a dog person, which is why I point that out. You are the GOAT when it comes to animal behavior, and I thank you so very much, not only for joining again on the radio, but for everything you have done in your career to contribute to what we know about dog and also cat behavior. It is a pleasure to talk to you again.
Oh, Steve, when you are too kind, far too kind, and I remember that talk, and it was really good.
It was
really good. I meant it. It was, you know, and I, most of my work has indeed been with dogs, and my books are about dogs. But when I'm seeing clients, I work with cats too. And in spite of the fact that I'm allergic to them, I adore cats. I absolutely adore them. So, yeah.
I've got good news for you about cat allergies, which is something we never planned to talk about. But I will tell you. So when we're allergic to cats, we are allergic not to the cat or the dander. We are allergic to actually a protein on their saliva called FELD1. And now of course you know that. But now there is, you may or may not know this, a cat food from Purina that neutralizes that protein. It's a cat food in a way. That's made for us. It's called Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. And what it manages to do is neutralize that protein so we're not allergic to it anymore. It's amazing, really.
I had not heard of that.
What?
Ooh.
Oh.
No, I hadn't.
All right. So I know you're still in Wisconsin.
Talk to my husband.
Yeah. I need to call every shelter in Wisconsin, have them deliver cats to your house now, because now she can have a cat. I meant what I said. I mean, there are, first of all, that book for The Other End of the Leash, as well as For the Love of a Dog, they are classics. And there are students in behavior who are told, I need to read that book. When you wrote the book, The Other End of the Leash, it was really, to me, you were saying, and it's hard to boil down, I don't know, 300 pages into one sentence, but you were saying, consider the dog's perspective. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. And you are, again, you are so kind, far too kind. But the reason I wrote it, I mean, I was really lucky. I really was, Steve. I was incredibly lucky, partly because of the timing. It was it was the right time for the world to start rethinking how we work with dogs and how we treat them and how we think of them. You know, that these are sentient, emotional, individual creatures who don't need to be, quote, dominated in order to get them to do what you want them to do. So the timing was really fortuitous for me. But the other thing that I think made such a huge difference was that I came out of a zoology background, and I had done a lot of work with primates. I actually worked with these adorable animals, cotton-top tamarins, South American tamarins. So I was very invested in the primate world, and I'd studied primate behavior. So I thought of us as primates, because we are, right?
Yeah.
And so I literally remember, I'm not making this up, it sounds crazy, but I literally remember being in a dog training class and listening to somebody go, sit, 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 to their dog, like that, right? You know how we repeat things over and over again?
Yeah, yeah.
And I had just been at the university getting my graduate degree, watching a video of chimpanzees going, and just all, I was like, all of a sudden I was like, okay, wait, we are primates, they are canines, what's the same, what's different? My dog just came over, by the way. Hi, Skippy, it's okay, Skip. So I just started thinking about how we are so much the same as dogs and how we're so different from dogs. And that's really what the book is about. It's and if you think about it, that's what almost all of my books have been about, really, not the training books, but the books that you mentioned. They're comparing human behavior with canine behavior. And I talk about what's the same. For example, humans and dogs are exceedingly playful for mammals. Most mammals aren't that playful when they're adults. They're playful when they're young. Lots of good reasons for that. They're not that playful when they grow up, but we are, and dogs are. And that's, I mean, if you think about how much joy our dogs give to us, that's part of it. They're also like uber, hyper, insanely social, which is why they're happy to cuddle on the couch with us and why we want to cuddle on the couch with them, because we're uber, hyper social, and are happy to take other species into our family groups. But we're also really, really different. We are highly visual, and they use their noses a lot, right? There's so many differences between the way we communicate and the way they communicate and the way our expectations are. So I think I'm spending too long answering this question.
No, that's fine. And, you know, you once wrote, and I want you to comment on what you said in fact, the book, The Other End of the Leash, which is still available, by the way, friends. You wrote this: what we label as disobedience is frequently a breakdown in communication, not willful defiance. I want you to comment on that when we come back with Dr. Patricia McConnell on WGN. So many books, so many scientific papers. I could not list them all. The Other End of the Leash is the classic book for the love of a dog. Oh, that's another classic book. And so many scientific papers and much, much more. Dr. Patricia McConnell here on WGN. You once hosted a radio show, did you not?
I co-hosted with Larry Mueller. We co-hosted a show on Wisconsin Public Radio for, oh my goodness, 14 years, called Calling All Pets.
Yeah.
And then I also did a show called Petline on Animal Planet that was on for a couple of years. I did it with my ex-husband, Doug McConnell, and we co-hosted it. People sent in videos of their animals misbehaving, and then my job was to provide advice, and Doug's job was to be an engaging, amusing, handsome host.
I remember that show, and our paths crossed. Our paths crossed at Animal Planet way back in the day when I was doing stuff for them. So here's the thing. Now, Animal Planet's still around, but we have many more choices, including social media, including TikTok and Instagram, where you see these dog trainers say, I've just done this. Here's the before, and you see a dog go, are, which is generally fear. But for whatever the reason, you see that growling or aggressive dog, and then, oh, this is what I'm doing. And then you see them using a shock collar, maybe some other methods as well. They may say, well, you need to dominate the dog. And you know what? I thought that when Cesar Millan faded away, all of that might fade away. And it did for a time. But I don't know why it seems to be back again. So concurrently, right now, anybody anywhere, and it's been this way forever, can say, I'm a dog trainer. And you don't necessarily, hopefully people ask to see certification, but they don't necessarily. And by the way, ask to see certification. It's not a bad idea. What their continuing education has been, et cetera. And there are more dog certifying groups than ever before. If I begin to name them all, I'm going to leave out too many, but I'll give it a try. Karen Pryor Academy, International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, Victoria Stillwell Dog Training, Gene Donaldson Academy for Dog Trainers, and the Pet Professional Guild is another, and the Association for Dog Training International, which was APDT. And I think I've got the big ones there. And they all got together with the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers to say, it's a good idea. Let's have them all be certified. Unfortunately, in my view, the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers said, by the way, it's okay, acceptable to routinely use, these are my words, not theirs, but the essence of it, equipment such as shock collars and some others like the prong collars, those are the cartoon thing looking collars, the point inward to the dog's neck, or the chain link so-called choke collars as well. And the other organizations, all of those that I just rattled off, said, we don't want to be a part of that. And one by one, they issued statements and said, no, we don't want to be a part of this anymore. It's become a thing to use this sort of equipment, and I'll start with shock collars, as concurrently, interestingly enough, more and more nations around the world are banning shock collars. Cities in America are looking at doing that. Some have done it. So that's happening at the same time. This is a very, very confusing time if you have a dog, Dr. McConnell, and want to choose a dog trainer. So I'll start there. What should you look for? What should you say? Okay, if this person is doing this, I never want to train with that person. Do you have any ideas about that?
Oh, man, it's just heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yes.
It breaks my heart, Steve.
Yes.
You know, we work so hard to explain and show and prove. There's so much research that understanding how to use positive reinforcement, which is not just giving your dog a cookie randomly, right? It's not bribing your dog. Understanding, and it ain't rocket science, by the way, once you learn it, understanding how to use positive reinforcement and classical counter conditioning is incredibly powerful, just astoundingly powerful. I mean, look at the people. Well, I'll just take Ken Ramirez since we both admire him equally. I mean, he can get any animal to do just about anything, and this is what zookeepers are doing. There's a zookeeper in Madison who can get a rhino, one of the world's most dangerous animals, to ejaculate on cue.
What?
Right?
I don't want to hear anymore. Yes. Hold it. Stop. This is early morning radio. What does she say? Let's give another example. I was just visiting a zoo. I'm on the board of the Every Cat Health Foundation, and together the board of directors visited a zoo in Florida, a smaller zoo in central Florida. And they showed us how these large cats, in some cases, were trained to target and, as a result, take their paw out. And without any struggle whatsoever, the keeper would be able to do a blood draw. And, of course, there's a reward in it. Right. That might be a better example to use.
Yes, it's a fine example. But I got people's attention, so
you did.
Attention is relevant, right?
You woke them up.
But it's just, it breaks my heart, Steve, that I don't know. It feels like in general the world is becoming a crueler place, but it is indeed true in terms of dog training. I have heard from trainer colleagues all around the country that there is this resurgence of people using shock collars. And the idea, to me, letting anybody go to a store and buy a shock collar and use it on a dog is like saying, you know what, you don't need a medical license. Here's the scalpel. You can deal with your daughter's appendix. You know, go ahead. You don't need any training or anything. It's appalling. I mean, it's absolutely appalling. They and so unnecessary because, as we were talking about, understanding the use of science-based training, it's one, it's easy. It's so much easier. And it doesn't destroy the relationship you have with your dog. So, I was just on a Zoom call with the book club at the Association of Professional Dog Trainers, and we got to talking about why is this huge resurgence of using truly harsh, punishing, and sometimes really dangerous methods to train dogs. And the best hypothesis is that, one, there's an explosion of trainers looking way cool on TikTok,
mm-hmm.
and other social media, right? And, you know, using very carefully curated and edited videos, just like has happened in the past of other trainers on television. There's also a big resurgence of, and this is something I want to get people to be really thoughtful about. There's a big resurgence in board and train. So you take your dog to a trainer, the dog is there for 2 or 3 weeks, usually two, you pay thousands of dollars, and then when you pick up the dog, you might get a little tiny bit of time learning what they taught the dog, learning how to do it, which is frankly, and the shock collar is $500 extra.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And the thing that people need to know is that in terms of training, so you have a puppy, right? Or you have an adolescent dog. 95% of the training needs to be with you. 5% of the training is actually you working with your dog. The other is a trained professional coaching you on how to use your body, how to use your voice, how to understand timing, how to read your dog so you understand what scares your dog, what your dog wants, what's a reinforcement for your dog.
And I want to talk about that. And speaking of timing, here's some bad timing. We have to break for commercials, but we'll be right back with Dr. Patricia McConnell on WGN. Can I tell you a little secret just between us? So we just rolled by International Human-Animal Bond Day. I happen to be on the board, I have been for many years now, of the Human-Animal Bond Association. I guess they just can't get rid of me. I don't know. But I've been on the board for a long time, and it was my idea to create this day. And I'm so proud that not only did that happen, and I'm not the guy who made that happen. Someone else made that happen. But also, all these other organizations around the world have picked up on the idea. And the idea comes from this. Well, first of all, there is a human-animal bond that's more intense than ever before regarding our pets. But it goes beyond pets, way beyond pets. In fact, if you are a human, and probably you are if you're listening to this, then you are hardwired to have the human-animal bond. So here's an example. The number one attended event that other people attend could be a sports event. It could be anything. Not a tourist attraction. I'm not talking about that per se. In the world, what would that be? Think about it. Take a guess. It isn't. Number two is going to football games that we call soccer games. But number one is attended by over 700 million people around the world who visit accredited zoos and aquariums. Now, no matter what you think about zoos, one way or the other is not the point. What draws us to zoos? Something must, as children, but adults too. And this is true in Singapore. It's true in Brazil. It's true in the United States. It doesn't matter what culture, which is interesting as well. We are all attracted to visit the wild world that we don't necessarily get to see in our backyards. But why do we have pets? Similarly, no one forces us to have a pet. It's a cost of time. It's a cost from our pocketbook as well. So no one forces us to do this. But yet, in America, more people have a pet or pets than ever before. Pets is the right, because there are more multi-pet homes by far than ever before in America. And in fact, far more people have a pet or pets than have children. And we're hardwired even to understand dogs to a degree, although what we now know today is dogs understand us far better than we understand them. You don't believe me? Get angry on the telephone, and your dog will do one of two things: come to console you or run in the other direction, but they are feeling your emotion for sure. So happy International Human-Animal Bond Day. Steve Dale back with you on WGN with Dr. Patricia McConnell, who is the GOAT of dog training. Am I the first one to say that to you, Dr. McConnell?
Yes. That was ridiculously too kind.
No, it's true.
That's very kind.
No. It is so true. So you wrote, what we label as disobedience is frequently a breakdown in communication, not willful defiance. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, exactly what I said, but I will elaborate on that. In that, so often, let me give you an example. Actually, there's a dog training company somewhere in the world that's called Sit Mean Sit, and that title just sort of sends the hair up a little bit on my back, because sit doesn't mean sit to sit means nothing to a dog.
Right.
Until we go out of our way to teach it using dog language and using good principles of science to influence behavior, sit means nothing to a dog. And if we ask them to sit and they don't sit, there are multiple reasons why they didn't. One, the most common one, is that they just can't right then, because they're so overwhelmed. Because I just saw a guy at a national park. There were hundreds of people. There was tons of stuff going on. There was all this activity. Guy walked into this group, and he told the dog to sit. And you could see the dog was, like, stunned. Dog was like, I can barely handle where I am right now. And the dog was, you could see his nose moving. He was actively trying to use his nose to put himself in space and time, right? And I was like, oh, don't ask this poor dog to sit. He literally can't right now. It's like if you're in the middle of an organic chemistry exam, you know? And someone asks you to count backwards in sevens or something. I mean, they're just, oftentimes dogs are so overwhelmed, they just honestly can't. So that's one reason. Another reason why dogs won't sit when you ask them to is because we really haven't taught it. They really don't know what that word means. Very commonly, because dogs are so visual and communicate more visually than auditorily, very often, you think the dog knows to sit when you say sit, but it's really your body language. It's really that every time you say sit, you lean forward just a half of an inch, and maybe you raise your hand a tiny little bit. That's the cue that dogs learned. So if you change your behavior in some way, maybe you're trying to show off to friends and you say sit and your dog doesn't, it's just as often because you didn't do what you normally do. And the cue that dog that was salient to the dog has disappeared. So there are, you know, so when I say that, quote, disobedience, I don't like that word, but when dogs aren't compliant or don't do what we ask, it's very often because it's not defiance, it's confusion, the dog is overwhelmed. And yes, every once in a while, I mean, good heavens, an adolescent teenage dog, you know, dogs have teenage years too. You can ask them to sit and they're like, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So let me ask you this. We had a dog miniature Australian Shepherd or North American Shepherd named Lucy. Appropriate name for this dog who had a great sense of humor. And I would stop someone on the street, or we would be stopped on the street by little kids. She loved little kids. And I would say, do you want to hear a joke? And then I would tell some sort of kid joke. I don't know, like, how many lives does a frog have? And they'd say, I don't know, or whatever they'd say. And I'd say, oh, they have many lives because they croak every night or something like that. And can't believe she's laughing at that. Then I would move my hand like up and down, and our dog would go, oh. It got to the point, though, and you have to explain this. It got to the point when you talk about body language, I didn't even know what I was doing anymore. I would tell the joke, whatever that joke is, wasn't always the same joke. I would tell the little kid's joke, look at the dog, and the dog, Lucy, would go, oh, without a cue.
I love it.
But I'm sure there was a cue. There was, but I have no idea what it was.
Of course there was, and it was possibly your body language, and it can be a quarter of an inch. It can be less than that. I mean, think about looking at somebody's face, and they get this tiny little smile on their lips, you know? Maybe their lips move like an eighth of an inch. That makes a difference in how you perceive their smile, right? And so it could have been visual, but it also could be, your dog sort of learned the pattern of the setup, right?
Yeah.
So that's another possibility. I mean, I think it was maybe Ken Ramirez who is, in my opinion, the GOAT of all time of animal trainers without question. I think it might have been Ken Ramirez who said, what else do they have to do but look at us and watch us and trying to figure us out, right? We're these enigmas wrapped in a mystery to them. And they're always watching us, trying to figure us out.
Our dogs... And by the way, I agree with you about Ken, a former Chicagoan, by the way. He worked at the Shedd Aquarium, of course, for many years. Are dogs always communicating with us and always asking us questions?
I'm sorry. Would you repeat that?
Are dogs always communicating with us and always asking us questions?
No. I don't think so. Do you? I think, you know, they're sentient creatures. They have lives.
So they're ordering pizza or whatever.
They're on the internet, you know. They're talking to Dr. Google. But they are sentient individuals whose attention can vary, right? I was just, for example, getting sheepdog training lessons from, here we're going to use it again, from the GOAT of sheepdog trainers, Scott Glenn, who's a Canadian. He wins everything. So I was there yesterday getting this fabulous set of lessons from him with my dog Skip, who's a working sheepdog. And Skip and I and Scott were all standing together talking. There were sheep about 50 yards away. What was Skip concentrating on? It was not us, right?
I wouldn't think so.
So it could be the sheep, but it could be the squirrel. It could be the chipmunk. It could be the dog next door. It could be your partner opening the food cabinet, right? So I love your question, Steve, because I think it's easy to just assume they're sort of always plugged into us if they love us, you know? But they're not. They're individual creatures who are barraged by sensory information all the time, and their attention has to shift. And so if I was queen, which I am so not, honestly, one of the first things I would ask everybody, please teach your dog that when you say your dog's name, it means the exact same thing as it means when we say our names. So if you and I were... in a room together. So we're in a lobby of a hotel, right, at a conference. And I said, Steve, you would know exactly what I meant, which is, yo, you, I know who you are, and I want your attention. That's what Fido and Chester and Ginger. That's what those names should mean. But people use them a lot and overuse them, in my opinion, and tell the dog, they often use them before they give a correction. And then the dog gets like, I don't like that name anymore, right? You know, people will use a dog's name as when they're upset with the dog, they'll say Ginger, right? It's
yeah.
Like,
yes,
that's not ideal. That's not ideal.
I want to talk more about that and more about corrections, if you will, and equipment we increasingly are seeing some trainers use to train dogs with the queen for the day, Dr. Patricia McConnell, when we come back on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. We're talking about dog training and dog training methods and a trend that's definitely out there to use shock collars and other aversive punishment-based equipment to train dogs. And what Dr. McConnell is saying, that one of the things she's seeing is these so-called board and trains, where you say, you know what, I'm too busy, I don't have the time, I don't have the expertise, I don't even have the will to do it, whatever. I'm going to have someone train the dog. They're going to board the dog. They'll do my work for me. The problem with that is you don't know for sure what they're doing and how they're doing it. But Dr. McConnell, even more than that for me, it is the relationship with the dog. You call it the other end of the leash. And I once said, and have said many times, I've probably borrowed your term in saying this, that dog training is really a matter of communication, as you have two different species, really. And it's opening that window of communication from one to the other. And you're missing that. Go ahead.
No, I just want to say that I interrupted you to say that so well said, because that, you know, you really nailed the important point, which is when you're training your dog, you're enhancing your relationship. You're learning together. You know, you're doing something together. Like, and there's nothing like it, right? And the flip side of that is whoever uses these coercive kinds of punishment related methods like shock collars and prong collars, and the use of those can have a profound effect on your relationship. We know there's lots of science out there. There's lots of studies that have showed that animals who are trained using, for example, prong collars are much more stressed, are much more likely to be exploratory, to investigate things, and it damages the relationship. You know, do you want a dog to do something because he's afraid of you? I mean, that's what it gets down to, right? So, yeah, I so hope, and I credit you so much, Steve, for trying to get the pendulum to swing the other way, because in my belief, the relationship between us and dogs is literally, and I know it sounds extreme, it's a biological miracle. It's a miracle. I mean, this was happened to you. I was sitting outside just in our yard on the deck with the dogs, and they were just lying with us. And there were rabbits and squirrels and heaven only knows what, right, going on around us. And they just chose to be with us. And I just sat there a couple of nights ago thinking, what a miracle and what an honor that this predatory carnivore chooses to just spend its time with me, with us, with me and my husband. What an honor. And it's just, you know, the things that we can do together, I mean, the things that dogs are doing for us now, by the way, all using positive reinforcement, but, you know, sniffing out endangered species and sniffing out leaks in gas lines and sniffing out whether bourbon or some kind of whiskey has gone bad. You can talk to Kat Warren, who's another great.
I want to hear all that. I've got to hear about that one at some point down the road. I've not heard that before. So, I love it.
Yeah, it's true. So it's just an astounding relationship that we have with them. And why, especially in 2025, why would we go backwards and pollute that relationship with using these punishment related methods that make our dogs afraid of us. That's just an admission. You know, using those kind of methods to me is an admission that you don't really know how to train a dog. Because punishment can be sometimes effective. It's quick, but it doesn't work anywhere near as people think, because you have to, you know, it's damaging of relationships. It's actually, believe it or not, so much harder to do positive reinforcement if you just learn the basics. It's so easy. It's so easy, and you can mess up. You can't ever mess up if you use punishment. And
that's
so
a very good,
it's just a horrible method from so many different perspectives.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Also, I think we know more, a couple of things. We know more about behavior modification than we did back in the day. I'm not saying I'm defending necessarily the use of that equipment back in the day. However, today we just know so much better. That's one thing. And the other is, even if the dog doesn't associate you with the punishment, the fact is that there may be pain involved and you're hurting your dog or having someone hurt your dog.
Right.
And the other is the collateral psychological damage that we know from studies that does occur with these dogs.
Yes, yes. It increases stress. It increases anxiety. And you know, one of the most important points that neither one of us have made yet that I know you know, Steve, is that one of the worst things about it, because there's so many, another huge problem with it is it doesn't teach your dog what you want.
Yes.
I mean, the whole point of, like, getting a dog to heel with you as you walk down a sidewalk, or not pull on a leash, which, by the way, is so undoggy. I mean, that's such a primate thing to do. You never see dogs, when they're loose, walking shoulder to shoulder, same pace, right? Straight line, doing nothing else. Not, you know, they don't do that. It's so alien to them. We have to train that like a circus trick. I think that's like a circus trick. It's like, they're so like, why would we do this? I don't understand. It makes no sense. Walk slowly at a stupidly slow, boring pace and ignore everything interesting. Okay, sure, got that, right? So if you correct a dog in any circumstance, you are never telling it what you want. And that's one of the beauties of positive reinforcement, is you are then teaching it what you want it to do. And dogs can get so clever that they start to learn to learn. So you can be like, okay, I'm going to teach you something new now. And they're like, oh, okay, what am I going to learn now? And I mean, how cool is that, right? How cool is that?
Absolutely agree with you. The other end of the leash, if you're enjoying this conversation, imagine 350 or 400, whatever it is, pages of the same by this brilliant woman, Dr. Patricia McConnell. You have a new book coming out, I understand. Like, you've a book like nothing else you've written before?
Like nothing else. I decided about 5 years ago that it would be really fun to write fiction. I wrote a mystery novel, and yes, there are dogs, and it's a murder mystery, just saying, but of course no dogs die. Of course, of course, of course.
But somebody does, because it's a murder mystery.
Somebody does.
Do you have a title for the book?
I think I can say it now. The title is Away to Me, which is a sheep handler's term that means run counterclockwise around the sheep.
Well, I don't know what that means, but when you read the book, and we'll have you back to talk about book. You can tell I'm a little nervous, friends, because I'm talking to the.
You were so silly.
No,
I could be the same, you know.
No, 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 no.
WGN Chicago. Oh my.
No, here the shoe is on the other foot, or the sheep, I don't know. Dr. McConnell, thank you so much. It is always great to talk with you. No surprise here. I mean, we knew that early socialization, incredibly important for dogs, but dogs have always been considered, and they still are, more resilient than, say, people are. But a study just published in scientific journals suggests there is a link between how a dog is raised to greater odds of aggression and other issues later in life. So if a dog is raised with harsh training methods, if a dog is abused in some way, if a dog is, interestingly enough, the researchers said, tethered, then odds are higher that that dog will have problems later in life. If any of those bad things happen before the dog is 6 months of age, then bad things may occur. Now, does it mean the dog can't be, quote unquote, rehabilitated? No, it does not. You can always teach a new dog, an old dog, new tricks, or a new dog, old tricks, or tricks to any dog. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.